Now, I need you all to imagine something for me. Imagine your least favorite thing to do. And no, I'm not talking about watching the Huskers lose in the waning moments of football again. I'm talking about your least favorite thing to do. Think about that. Picture it in your mind. And we're going to go back to a time in Jesus' life that we've actually already talked about this morning. Because you see, we're going to notice something particularly interesting in this passage. Something that's more or less missing. Something that Jesus did. We're in John chapter 13 now. And keep in mind that thing you don't like. If you have to, write it down. There's pages of bulletin and inserts, and there's palms of hand if you have to use that. Write it down so you don't forget it if you're prone to forget things. We're now in John chapter 13, and we're past this triumphal entry moment of Jesus' life, and we've basically now reached the end of the week, of the last week of Jesus' life. See, if you never really realized it, John is 21 chapters long. Chapters 13 through 20 encompass an entire 72 hours of his life. That's it. One third of the book of John is about 3 days of Jesus' life from Thursday night till Sunday morning. And then he moves on to later in the last chapter. But we get a huge look, a very detailed look at what this last day is like, or these last few days are like. And keep in mind, while it's those 3 days as a whole, there's not much to be said about Friday evening or Saturday. And by not much to be said, I mean, John tells us that they just all went home and then showed up on Sunday morning. Nothing done Saturday. So we're hitting this huge, detailed look at a very small portion of his life, but it is just that important. It's easy for us to forget just how important this event is. Not that we would ever say that we forget it, but we act like we forget it. We become accustomed to it and used to it. Did you know this is one of only a few stories in all of the Gospels that's repeated in all four Gospels? Those of you who have been here for a couple of years know that you've had to take a Christmas quiz at least once. And in that Christmas quiz, the very last question is, what books of the Bible will you find these interesting facts in about the birth of Jesus? Mark says nothing about the birth of Christ. John says nothing about the birth of Christ. They're all in Matthew and Luke, which just should tell us something about Christmas. It's incredibly important, but only important enough for two of the four Gospels to mention it. This, on the other hand, this event we're coming to is so important that not only do they mention it, but it's a third of the Gospel of John. A third of the entire book, written to basically cover everything that they thought was desperately needing to be covered, and he spends a third of his time writing about this one event because it is just that important, and it's so easy for us to move forward and sort of forget the vast importance of this night through Sunday morning. So then the Passover. They're at what we would call the Last Supper, and now we come to John chapter 13. And we're going to spend 3 weeks on verses 1 through 20. We're going to look at it in three different ways. This week, we're going to look particularly at service and humility. Next week, we're going to particularly pay attention to this conversation that Jesus has with Peter while washing his feet. A conversation that says, I need to wash your feet. And Peter says, no. And Jesus says, if I don't wash your feet, I have no part in you. And Peter then says, well, then wash all of me. And Jesus says, I don't need to wash all of you. You're already clean. Only your feet need to be washed. What in the world is going on there? We're going to look at that particularly. And then week three, we're going to look at Satan's work in the midst of all of this. As he works, we're going to read it about Judas several times in this passage, as he works to derail Judas, to derail Jesus. This isn't a new work in Judas. We've known that this whole gospel, that Jesus knew what Judas was going to do. But this is the culmination of that work. So we're going to look at Satan, and we're going to look at his tactics. We're going to look at what he does. We're going to look at how good Judas looked to all of the disciples until that moment, when all of a sudden they found out he wasn't who they thought he was. So let's read these 20 verses and then look at what service and humility is. Now, before the feast of the Passover, when Jesus knew that his hour had come to depart out of this world to the Father, having loved his own who were in the world, he loved them to the end. During supper, when the devil had already put it into the heart of Judas Iscariot, Simon's brother, to betray him, Jesus, knowing that the Father had given all things into his hands, and that he had come from God and was going back to God, rose from supper and laid aside his outer garments, and taking a towel, he wrapped it around his waist. And when he poured water into a basin, he began to wash the disciples' feet and to wipe them with the towel that was wrapped around him. He came to Simon Peter, who said to him, "Lord, do you wash my feet?" Jesus answered, "What I am doing you do not understand now, but afterward you will understand." Peter replied to him, "You shall never wash my feet." Jesus answered him, "If I do not wash you, you have no share with me." Simon Peter said to him, "Lord, not my feet only, but also my head and my hands." Jesus said to him, "The one who has bathed does not need to wash except his feet, but he is completely clean. You are clean, but not every one of you." For he knew who was going to betray him. That is why he said, "Not all of you are clean." When he had washed their feet and put on his outer garments and resumed his place, he said to them, "Do you understand what I have done for you? You call me teacher and Lord, and you are right, for I am. If I then, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, then you also ought to wash one another's feet. For I have given you an example that you also should do just as I have done to you. Truly, truly, I say to you, a servant is not greater than his master, nor a messenger greater than the one who sent him. If you know these things, blessed are you who do them. I am not speaking of all of you. I know whom I have chosen, but the scripture will be fulfilled. He who ate my bread has lifted his heel against me. I am telling you this now before it takes place, that when it does take place, you may believe that I am he. Truly, truly I say to you, whoever receives the one I send receives me, and whoever receives me receives the one who sent me. That is a big passage with a lot going on. I hope you caught those three themes that we're going to look at over the next 3 weeks. The theme of humility, though humility is never mentioned. Being a servant is mentioned. But we're going to talk about this Jesus who did these things and what he was like in the midst of doing them. We're going to take a look at this whole cleaning bit, because that is particularly important to us, especially as us who come as his children. We come as those being clean who need their feet washed. And what does that mean? And how does that work? Now we're going to look at this thread of Satan weaved through this story, ruining Judas Iscariot, who was filled with him, seeking to ruin Jesus. The funny thing is, his very attempt to ruin Jesus is the very thing that God uses to ruin Satan. So all of Satan's work to derail what Jesus was doing, he didn't understand, was actually doing the very thing that was going to destroy him. But that's for 2 weeks from now. Now, before the feast of the Passover, when Jesus knew that his hour had come to depart from this world and go to the Father, what does it say about Jesus? What does John say to set up this entire passage about Jesus? Having loved his own, he loved them till the end. Having loved his disciples, his children, his chosen, he loved them till the very bitter awful, sweet, amazing end. That could be in and of itself a sermon. This love that didn't reach a point where it said, I'm done trying. I've done what I've come to do. Now I'm going to focus not on you, but on this task ahead of me. Just going to set you aside for a bit. And instead, I'm going to focus on this thing that I have to do, this incredibly important thing. Right? That's not what it says. It says, having come to the end, Jesus, having loved his disciples, having loved them exactly as he was supposed to, he continued to love them till the end. And it didn't end. It moved on and grew and grew. And it's exampled here in what he did. We all know the story, which is part of our problem. Because we fast forward to the end. Yes, I know, Jesus, towel, water, feet, clean, yuck, whatever. That's sort of what our brains do. It just moves on through that process. But let's step back and let's look at him. I don't want us to focus on the facts. I don't want us to focus on the details. I want us to focus on him. Jesus, having loved his own, he continued to love them till the end. During supper, when the devil had already put it in the heart of Judas Iscariot, Simon's son, to betray him, when this has already taken place, Jesus, catch what he knows about himself, okay? We have all been in places of leadership to one extent or another, even if you're a little one. People follow you. They've done what you do, which means you're leading them, right? We've all been in that role, but listen to this Jesus and what he knows about himself. Jesus, knowing that the Father had given all things into his hands, and that he had come from the Father, and that he was going back to the Father. Okay, who is this Jesus? Simply the most important person in the world. And he knows it. And he knows it. He came from God, being God, to this earth, and he knows it. God has given him everything, and he knows it. He's not even going to stick around here. This is temporary, and he knows it because this isn't good enough for him. Knowing all of this about who he is, he now is going to set himself in a place where he does the most lowly thing he can think of. I don't want to get hung up on this whole foot washing bit because it means effectively nothing to us. It's not even in our world, feet washing. But let's suffice it to say in this moment that Jesus, knowing who he is, knowing his value, knowing his place, knowing his power, chose to do the most lowly, awful thing he could think of. Why? Why? Why did he choose to do that? It's really quite simple. Having loved his own, he loved them to the end. He didn't do this for any reason other than he loved them. So he served them. Have any of you ever had your feet washed? I have. I don't know if you have. Somebody has physically washed my feet as an act of service. You know what I thought it was? Just weird. I had just come from taking a shower. My feet were clean. Then they washed them. All it did was tickle. I have incredibly ticklish feet. I do. That's why you will almost always see me with shoes on, because my children have found out how to tickle said feet. I don't like it. My wife, God bless her, she thinks it's funny to tickle me. And she knows that I have a very competitive spirit, right? So she says, I'll bet you can't sit still for 10 seconds. Yeah, I can do it. After the first time she tickles me, I might be able to make it. After the first time, all she has to do, or anybody once I've already been tickled, get their hands near me, and I will giggle uncontrollably. Yeah, you laugh. You laugh, but it's like kryptonite to me. I can't breathe. I can't think. I can't control myself. I just lay there and giggle like a small girl. Okay? It's quite humorous, I've got to imagine. But when I got my feet washed, it just tickled. It was supposed to be this great sign of people serving me, but all it was weird. Because it meant nothing to me. So I want you to go back to the thought I had you think of first. What is that thing that you hate doing the most? Yeah, see, most of you are thinking, oh, I'm glad I didn't write this down. I can come up with something else right now. Think about that, though. Because, see, Jesus took the worst thing that he could do, and he did it because he loved the people he was doing it for. You've probably all heard people talk about what it is to wash somebody's feet. But let's go through it again in case you hadn't, or in case it's a good reminder. See, we wear these things, right? These things. Shoes. What are they meant to do? Keep the smell in, right? What else are they meant to do? Protect your feet as you walk across the gravel? We were playing football out at the hayride, and Lydia kept running across the gravel with bare feet. I was really impressed, because that would hurt my feet, because my feet aren't used to being on rough ground like that with pokey things sticking up into them. They also keep them relatively clean. You ever noticed the dirt that gets on your shoes that isn't on your feet? Okay, now rewind 2,000 or so years and imagine walking not down paved sidewalks or concrete sidewalks, but mud and dirt. And it's where the horses go. And I mean go. Okay, it's where they go. Okay, maybe they didn't have much for horses. But the animals, they go to the bathroom wherever they want to, and you're walking through it. It gets trampled. It gets all over. Your feet get gross. So that's why they would have somebody wash your feet when you arrived to their house, because even if it's just for their own house's sake, it's better to have your feet clean than to have them dirty and in your house. And it makes you feel better. So now Jesus does this act of washing their feet, which is gross, disgusting, awful. And there's no way he liked it. So I want you to think back to that thing that you say, I really hate doing this. I really hate cleaning anything ever. Sometimes, though, that is the very thing that I need to do to show love to somebody else. Because I don't see anything in this passage that says, find something that you like to do that other people don't, and do that thing. I see in here a Jesus who knows his place as God, as the authority, as the sovereign, as the king, as the everything, choosing to do that which nobody else wants to do. And it's so easy for us to not do that. Now we're going to step back for a moment. All of you in here who are elected church leaders, listen to me. All of you in here who ever aspire or think to be elected church leaders, listen to this. All of you in here who are not elected but lead things within the church, listen to this, because this is expected of you. This is what I expect of you. This is what you should expect of me. Service to others in order to lead them based out of a heart of humility. And that's where it all falls apart most of the time. Because let me tell you what most people do, and I'm not talking specifically about anybody. I just know the hearts of people and the way that they work. And we work like this. I will be an elected or in a position of leadership, and I will serve those around me so that they see me serving those around me. As soon as I do it so that they see it, I'm doing all the right actions, but not out of a heart of humility. Not out of a place where I'm choosing to love these other people by doing what I know they don't want to do. Because notice, none of the other disciples had washed anybody's feet yet. Apparently, they're at this dinner and nobody's done it. You have those jobs around home. Husbands, wives, here's how it goes at home. At 2:30, when your kid wakes up crying, you both pretend like you're sleeping through it. I've done that. I hear the kid try to act like I'm out so that she goes and gets them. Why? Because at 2:30 in the morning, it is really easy for me to care more about me than about her. That's wrong. I can do things here at church, and I can do them so that other people see me do them, so that you can know I'm doing these things, so that you can think highly of me as a servant leader, because that's a big key buzzword. People want to hear that, servant leadership. So I serve in a way that you can see me so that you can know that I'm being a servant leader. At that point, I'm probably doing it so that I look good, not because I love you, not because I'm being humble. Worse yet, then I can say, well, if I'm not doing it out of the right attitude, just forget it all. I'm not doing anything. Somebody else can clean that up. Somebody else can whatever. Somebody else can take care of that job that I don't want to do. That's our tendency. As people, that's our base mode of operation. And it's wrong. And it's doubly wrong for those of us who find ourselves in positions of leadership. Because we're just not given the opportunity to do that. If we're going to follow Jesus as our example of leadership, then we need to serve in that sort of way. Now we may ask, why not actually wash people's feet? That's what Jesus did. And he said, I'm giving you an example. So that's the example. Do the example. You ever taken a test? Anybody in here ever taken a test? A math test particularly? Whoa, okay, that's better. I was wondering how we got to where we got. Actually, no, never mind. When you take a math test, very first thing is example problem, okay? Have you ever taken a math test that has an example problem and question number one is the example problem? One of you says you have. That's a weird test. I like that test if the example problem is the same as the problem number one. Examples don't mean here's the exact thing you do. It means here's the type of thing that you do. In stepping back to earlier in Jesus' ministry, he does the same thing. We call it the Lord's Prayer. I'll bet most of us could quote the Lord's Prayer. I'll bet most of us have never thought about the Lord's Prayer as we're quoting the Lord's Prayer. But Jesus didn't give us the Lord's Prayer that we call the Lord's Prayer in order to recite it. He gave it to us as an example of prayer. What prayer is supposed to look like. Not repeating a certain chant that will all of a sudden acquire for you some blessing from God. It's an example of prayer. Now, don't hear me saying that memorizing it and quoting it's bad. Not what I'm saying. Just memorizing and quoting it wasn't the point. Memorizing and quoting it is what you do for Scripture to understand it, but it was an example of the type of prayer we should pray. This is an example of the type of actions we should take. I will very vividly, for the rest of my life, remember one night driving back from Kansas City with a 15-passenger van full of middle schoolers. After having spent the whole day at Worlds of Fun down in Kansas City, it was great, okay? Until we stopped at Culver's to eat on the way home. And I like Culver's. And we all had burgers and the whatnot from Culver's. And then, about an hour and a half later, about 2 hours from York, we stopped and we had to get gas. And we got the kids out, they got drinks, whatever. Apparently, somebody decided that they were going to have a chugging contest for their Coke of what or whatever it was. And they chugged this 20-ounce Coke as fast as they could. It's now about 10:30 at night. It's dark. This is an old rickety van. The lights don't work in it. And he throws up all over the back of the van. He had to be in the back, okay? There are several sponsors there. several of whom were women, who I was hoping would turn on this like mom switch where nothing bothers them, nothing smells, nothing's gross, it just gets done. It didn't happen. So I got the opportunity to stop at a gas station, which had closed 3 minutes before we got there, and they wouldn't let us in to get paper towels. So we found shop towels, like four of them. And I had four shop towels to clean out the back of this vehicle, but then nowhere to clean off when it was done. We made a rule after that trip that nobody was allowed to ever chug anything on a trip again. But the funny thing is, the next year when we went down, somebody threw up again. So we just decided we're not stopping anymore. It was horrible. But I had to clean it up. I wanted to tell these other people who, you know, I was the leader of all of this. And I wanted to say, you clean that up. And I could have. I would have been within my rights to delegate that responsibility. But I knew they wanted it no more than I did. And let me tell you what happened. I'll bet none of those kids remember it. I know some of the sponsors remember it because we've had some good laughs over it. Those sponsors, my relationship with them changed based on the fact that I decided what they needed and wanted was far more important than what I needed and wanted. And just like that, something changed because I chose, rightly, for once it seemed, to act out of humility, to do something I desperately did not want to do, so that they didn't have to do it. That's what we've got in Jesus here. Now, he waits till the end of his ministry to do this, but he does it. And he does it, he says, so that they will believe in him. He does all of this. He tells about Judas going to betray him so they will believe in him. He does this so they will know he loves them and they can show others then how to love each other. And that, friends, is what we're called to do. Now, a common mistake is made in this moment. This moment of recognizing the need for this true service to other people. And the problem that's made is then the assumption, well, if this is what it's supposed to look like, then how am I ever going to lead anything? All I'm ever doing is serving the people, and then they end up leading the thing, which could be okay, but I'm supposed to be leading the thing. Particularly becomes a problem when you're talking about the elders. You've put them in a place to lead. And then if they, all they ever do is the things behind the scene that don't lead anything, eventually people would say, hey, you're missing your responsibility. So what's the tension here? Let me ask you this. How many years did Jesus travel with his disciples? Roughly 3. How many times did he wash their feet? Exactly 1. So that means I only have to serve you 1 time every 3 years. No. This is an example of what we're supposed to be like. But I want us to realize that out of the 3 years that Jesus was doing this, this wasn't a normal, all the time sort of thing where this became his role to wash their feet, to take out their clothes, to do the laundry, to whatever. You know how I know that? Peter's appalled that Jesus is going to do this. I would assume if Jesus had done it every day for 3 years, he would have gotten used to it. But he wasn't. I just want us to recognize that there is a tension here. Those who lead must serve, and serve humbly, and serve willingly, and serve because they love. And I don't mean serve in their role. I mean actually serve those people. But at the same hand, that's not all they do. Because you put them, elders particularly, in that role to do one very important thing that you don't want to do. Do you know what that is? To say hard things and make decisions that aren't easy. That's a big part of what their role is as elders. Why do I say that? I say that because their job is to give direction to the body, which means they're coursing or planning a course, running it with the body, leading them in that direction. And sometimes you're not going to like the direction they go. Sometimes you're going to say, whoa, 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 I don't want to climb that hill. I want to climb that hill. But you've put them in that role to make a decision that they understand from Scripture and God as well as they can, a decision that's best for the body. And I've been there with them. I know what those men think like. I know how they process what's going on. And I know that when they sit down at that table or they sit down in an office to talk, their goal is not what would be simplest for me. The question is always, what is best for the body? For us to serve them in that direction. Sometimes they're going to have conversations that nobody else wants to have. Sometimes they're going to have to make decisions that nobody else is going to want to make, because always somebody's going to dislike it. But their job is to set themselves aside for others. That's what our job is as husbands. That's what my job is as a pastor. That's what your job is as a believer. So what are some of the things that could cause you to get these priorities mistaken, misplaced? Because see, if I'm supposed to put this in serving people above or primary to the other things of life, that means that I can't get caught up even as a pastor in doing the things that a pastor does. Because see, I could spin my wheels and spend all week doing the things that a pastor does, but not accomplish the task that I've been given, which is to help people grow. As people, you could spend your entire week focused on making enough money to provide well for your family and end up neglecting the God who's giving you the money and giving you the food to provide for your family. You could end up neglecting the family that you're providing for because you're providing for the family. If we're going to serve and love people and love them to the end, then we need to do what? Prioritize them. That's what Jesus did here. He didn't prioritize himself. He humbled himself. He didn't prioritize his works. He prioritized them. Because his work was to build them. His work was to save us. That's what he did. And that's what we're called to do, to serve people in that sort of way, to love each other in that sort of way. And if we do that, if you do that and if I do that, I want you to understand something out of the gate. We will look unlike anyone else you know. And you will look foolish for setting your business aside or your work aside or your promotions aside so that your family can grow. You will look foolish to set aside the things that this world calls worth getting in order to serve those people who are worth serving. And we will stop looking for other people to do what we could do. And when we stop looking for other people to do what we could do, then we'll take the gospel of salvation and life to a world that's dying. We will take the gospel of sanctification, the gospel that changes who we are as believers, and we'll take it to each other, to people who need to grow. We won't wait for someone else to do it, but we will do it because we love them enough to do it. That's what we're called to. That's the kind of radical, submissive, servant, humble life we're called to. Actually, that's the kind of radical, servitude, humble life we're expected of. Let's pray. God, we come to your presence.